Hello, you're listening to Spoiler Filled Film Conversation Hooray, or just Spoiler Filled, if you like. Here is the podcast. It's a film podcast where we talk about films. Not new ones, not ones in the cinema now, or now, but ones from like various places, DVD collections, online, just whatever we felt like. It's like a film club, and we just chat about them, and hopefully you'll enjoy it, and correspond with us on the social networking stuff, figure it out. Right, I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. Who else is here today? Start.
It's Bane.
It's Anthony Evans.
And?
Oliver the Poisoned Bodkin.
Poisoned Bodkin.
No. He's allowed to be a Poisoned Bodkin if he wants to.
Yeah. So guys, what film did we watch?
We watched Giant.
Giant. That's informative. Good. What was the film about and who was in it? And give us the skinny and the details before we go into the actual review proper.
Giant was a film from director George Stevens from 1956. It's 201 minutes. It stars Elizabeth Taylor, Rock Hudson and James Dean.
Yeah, it did.
And
I remember
other people.
And a bunch of other people, but I don't want to spend all day on that.
Yeah. Does anyone want to have a stab at the synopsis without going into too much tedious detail before we actually go into tedious detail?
It's essentially about the life of a married couple who live in Texas and about them as they go through life.
Yeah, it involves cows and oil and family arguments, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
And a slightly demented outsider who causes a lot of trouble.
In the form of Jet, who is played by James Dean. What were expectations going in? Let's start with you, Ollie. What were you thinking before you watched this?
I was thinking it was going to be very, very long and dull.
It was long.
As it turned out, it was long, but not all that dull. It was fairly engaging after a slightly rocky opening patch.
Okay.
It was quite entertaining. So good show.
Exceeded what you were expecting. Abby?
Well, I'd seen it before.
Oh, well. That was your suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay, then what were you thinking before the first time you watched it?
First time I watched it, I was thinking, if this is anything like Rebel Without a Cause, I'm not going to understand this film at all.
What? Well, I don't understand. You thought it would be like Rebel Without a Cause just because it had James Dean in?
Yeah.
Abby, you... I don't understand.
I was like 11.
So you assumed all films with one actor in are going to be exactly the same as each other?
No, because he only made
three. He's not Tom Hanks.
No, because
Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
He also only made three, and they were really close together.
And your Tom Hanks analogy is not precise, because Road to Perdition is nothing like Big.
No, but The Terminal is exactly like Castaway, and Big, and I was a bit wrong. Eddie Murphy's made loads of similar movies though. As Anthony coughed in earlier.
Yes.
Right, so what were you thinking? Why did you suggest this if you thought it was going to be like Rebel Without a Cause? Because it isn't.
Because subsequently,
right,
when I've watched it many times, and when I suggested it for this, yeah, I thought that it would be an interesting film that most people hadn't seen, because James Dean's films haven't been in vogue for a very long time.
He's very famous, like Marilyn Monroe, but has done less films, so people care about him less, perhaps.
Mm.
But he's a super iconic actor, but just from a very narrow time period.
Did we ask you what you expected?
You didn't. The same thing as Ollie. I saw the length of it. Was it like 3 hours, 15 minutes, 3 hours, 10? And I wasn't looking forward to it in the slightest. Coupled with, I knew it was going to be like a melodrama from the 1950s.
Because you've got good stamina for stuff like this, because you like Lord of the Rings and all that kind of thing. So
I do.
3 hours don't usually faze you.
True.
But a melodrama, 3 hours, about Texans.
Yeah. Plus, you know, I've been to university, I've had to sit through many a film like this, some of them not so great.
Yeah.
Really, a lot of them with Rock Hudson in.
Yes, they did.
Like you, Anthony, well, the first time, this is the second time, but the first time I watched it, I thought, I can't do this. It's going to be long and melodramatic and dry and... the first time, I watched the first 20 minutes and kind of gave up on it. And then I gave it another go, and then I kind of got into it. And then this time round, I was more familiar with it. And therefore, yeah, I knew what I was getting. So, Ollie gave us some idea of how it felt after watching it, you know. But what did you guys... Abby obviously likes it. Is that right?
Yes, I do like this one. Because it's so long and it's a particular kind or film. You don't feel like watching it all that often, but it does come around. Every now and again, I feel like watching Giant.
Yeah.
So it's good, I like it.
Ansi, how did you find it?
I thought I really liked it, actually. I thought it was a very well-made, well-written film.
Yeah, good direction too. Very nice visuals all over the place.
Mm.
Yeah. All that classic.
It reminded me of like all the old, when I was in uni, all the film books would have like the perfect kind of example film, and this felt like one of them. Like I was watching it, and I was always constantly aware of how each shot was framed, how the director was using lightning. Mm. It's one of those films, one of those deeply analytical films.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Ollie?
The framing was really good, and the shots were really good. When you break it down into two halves, I think you end up with kind of a kitchen sink drama in the first half, and which is also kind of a western. And in the second half, there's a movie that I liked a lot more because it was more natural and less forced.
What's a kitchen sink drama?
A kitchen sink drama is a humdrum routine. Domestic drama.
A lot of British things are kitchen sink dramas because it's about just normal people doing normal things and having normal problems.
Couples annoying each other and having arguments and then getting over it and stuff.
It's kind of like, that would date it. Bing, bing, bing. It's kind of like EastEnders before they gangsterised it.
I know exactly what you mean.
Because it's a melodrama, it is a little bit, like, you have to kind of readjust, you know, your expectations and go, this isn't going to be gritty and realistic. It's going to be like, I kind of saw it as being like a play that had been filmed, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
Like if you were to just take your play and literally, without changing much other than putting it in a setting in real life, then, you know.
I was quite surprised myself because it's not per se a romance film.
No.
Mm.
You do have like the two main characters, you know, like the male, female, married characters. But it's not so much about their romance, it's about how they live together and the family that they have together. Mm. And it's not specifically about how much they love each other, it's about how they just get on with
They're making a marriage work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, it was.
There's one thing we should probably mention before we carry on.
What?
Is that the main dynamic of the film is that you've got Bic Benedict, who's Rock Hudson, and Leslie, who's Elizabeth Taylor. They're married, but they're sort of feuding with Jett Rink, who is James Dean. I just want to say that then, so that when we reference things, they've got a vague idea of what we're talking
about. Yeah, well, because the weird thing about this is it starts off with the main characters meeting each other for the first time. And it's basically, for some reason, Rock Hudson, what should I call him? Should I call him by his actor's name? Or is it like...
Call him Bic.
Bic turns up at the family house of Leslie
to buy a horse
because they have horses and he wants a horse. Yeah, makes sense. He turns up, he spends a brief amount of time at a party and a breakfast, and she makes enough of an impression to marry him. It literally happens. She meets him, she decides that she's fallen in love with him matter of factly, and just and like her sister comes in and goes, do you think you're in love with him? And she's like, yeah, I think so. And then they're married. It's all like.
It took 2 days. She mentions that later, that it took 2 days.
2 days. She throws over the man she was going to go to Europe with and marry. Yeah. Decides to marry Bic instead.
Yeah. And but that kind of like then highlights how much of a romance it isn't.
Yeah.
Because they kind of get. The romance comes before, like, marriage in most films. So they just kind of get that out of the way really quickly.
It's kind of odd because she only really seems to love him towards the end of the movie. It's almost as if it's a really, really long story, and in the first half they're really just not well suited to each other at all, and then in the second half they actually do seem to start getting closer and emotional.
They allude to their love, but they don't really show it on camera very often,
because
most of the time they spend is arguing about something or other, and they're highlighting their differences. And it is just a case of, that's my daughter on the horse, I'll take the horse and I'll take the daughter. Next scene, let's go. And then they're coming back from their honeymoon. She's arriving on his big, big ranch. Part of the reason why it's called Giant is because Texas is massive, and his ranch that he owns is massive as well. And there's lots of big, sprawling landscapes and lots of money. There's just the kind of theme is big, isn't it? Because that's what Texas is about. And the first, like we mentioned, the first part of the film is about them getting to know each other in a kind of, for the first time, because she's not from there. She's like a East Coast lady, sounds kind of British, and he's a like proper Texas rancher. And there's a lot of contrast in their lives, really.
She's from Maryland, which is
Maryland
West, isn't it?
Is it
Maryland's East Coast?
Oh no, but it's that weird thing with Washington.
Thing with Washington. Our terrible geography of America aside, she is not from Texas, and therefore there's lots of obstacles and hurdles for her to deal with, isn't there?
Mm.
And while you've got the story of those two getting to know each other, there's also this kind of disenfranchised, slightly simpleton worker called Jet Rink, and how he has this unrequited love for Leslie, and is kind of basically batters himself up about it through most of the movie.
Yeah, James Dean is kind of like he's on the outside of the plot a lot of the time. Like, we get the feeling like Bick doesn't like him. Well, he says he doesn't like him, and he actually fired him. But this is an interesting point at the start of the film. Bick has a sister who is very much a ranching woman, quite masculine, and loves the business of ranching and herding cows and doing all that manly cowboy stuff. And she's kind of one of the first plot points and kind of dramatic moments of the film. Does anyone want to say anything about it? What they thought of her and the kind of... We could spoil away that she's dead. She dies. She dies.
It's a very utilitarian plot point. New wife turns up at ranch. Sister, who is previously woman of the ranch, is displaced, gets angry, and gets killed in a horse accident.
There's not much to say. It's like, if the character was in more of the film, maybe. But she's killed off pretty quickly, and because of that, there's very little impact towards the rest of the film.
I do give him a few points for having quite a unique woman for the time. You didn't get many women
like
that.
Give him who? Are you the director?
Yeah, give the director and writers credit. And the novelist, I guess, credit for having that unique type of woman in a melodrama.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of a problem between them. But like you say, it's kind of a linchpin for the rest of the plot. It kind of connects. It's the first example of her dealing with, you know,
her new life.
Yeah,
and trying to fit in.
Yeah, and it also, her death gives James Dean his kind of subplot, which is basically the film There Will Be Blood, as far as I'm concerned. James Dean sort of lives out his weird...
He gets left a parcel of land by Luz, the sister, and he discovers oil on it. So then he becomes very prosperous in this tiny bit of land that's part of the bigger ranch that belongs to Bick.
Yeah.
And Bick doesn't like it.
Yeah, because initially, after the sister dies, after... She's kind of cross because she feels like her toes are being stepped on by the new wife, and she takes her anger out on the horse for some reason, and that, you know, we get a horrible we get her kind of trying to tame the horse, but also like they cut rapidly to her spiking the horse with her what are they called?
She spurred that horse horrifically.
Yeah, it was quite brutal to like get that image in your head, and it really like flashes up into your eyes, and you kind of you have to deal with it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
It's interesting because you don't really care about it. It's during the phase of the movie when basically everybody is awful.
Yeah, everyone is horrible to everyone. Everyone's kind of getting on each other's nerves. But yeah, like you say, you know, we set up that James Dean is given this plot of land that he's asked to sell to Bick because Bick doesn't want anything. He wants all the land, basically, just for himself. And James Dean's like, I don't know. Think I'll keep it. Think I'll gamble on it and stuff.
Mm.
And, that annoys the rich hoity-toity rancher and his friends.
Bick and all of his friends, who may or may not be his family. I wasn't entirely clear. One of them is family.
Yeah, Bick has a kind of group of older men that are always in his house in a bunch of scenes throughout the years.
Yeah, I think it's more a collective kind of allegory of those kind of people.
And society in Texas.
They're the older kind of generation who are slightly racist and... Yeah. Sexist and all that. Yeah. And it's kind of just kind of like, you know, defines all them.
We know two of them specifically. One is a lawyer and one is an uncle. And the other four are generic
Texans.
Older Texans.
Yeah, in fact, the uncle character is a little bit more likeable because he kind of occasionally chips in with something wise to say to one of the characters, and fair play to him, he tries, but doesn't play that big a role, really.
He's kind of likeable through the whole movie, really. In fact, he kind of introduces something wherein, if you look at it in one way, it's a movie which is about how people get more likeable the older they get.
Yeah,
definitely. Especially with Bick's character. Because at the start, you have no hope for him. You kind of see the film going like, well, obviously they're not going to get on, and then there's going to be a huge fight between them. But he's the character who changes the most. You can see like his set ways at the beginning where he's, you know, this is a man's job, my son will get all this land. And then by the end, he sold off all his land for oil. He's let his children, you know, be themselves and not force any of them into doing what he wants.
And then the very pinnacle of the film is kind of about how he's come over a sort of his eternal racism a bit and is defending the Mexicans who live in Texas. I guess they're Texans as well, but the Mexican origin.
Because his son has married...
Yeah.
Well, was Latinos.
I'm trying to remember her name.
Yeah.
I've got it written down.
Juana.
Juana, yes. He's married Juana and they've had a child. So now... It's given Bick the incentive to change his ways.
For there's now a Latino Benedict.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of, yeah, it's kind of just a man going on a journey to try and... He's not trying to change himself, but it's just how life changes you and how when you get older, you get wiser.
He's just had to deal with things.
Yeah, or just reassess your situation and deal with it. But yeah, on the way, there's more things. There's lots of little anecdotes.
Yeah, this is a long film and a lot of stuff happens.
It doesn't quite happen overnight.
There's a lot of like small character scenes.
Yeah.
There's no big action scenes. And there's no particular big, like, dramatic romance moments either.
Yeah.
There's like lots of little fights or little moments and stuff like that. And it all builds up and it really like strengthens all the characters.
Mm. Yeah, occasionally there'll be fisticuffs, but there's never like that big dramatic... Like, you'd be tempted in a modern film maybe to throw in a like somewhere where someone's life is in jeopardy. I mean, they kill someone, but, you know, it's not like someone pulls a gun on someone and someone else has got a gun.
Yeah, it happens off screen.
It's all about arguments and dealing with vendettas and things. Yeah, so... James Dean spends most of the time just sort of trying to get comfortable in chairs, on floors, against walls. That's what I thought. He just seems to spend all the movie
His performance was very awkward. It's very twitchy and kind of uncomfortable. But kind of, you know, you never really quite know where he's going to go, what he's going to do because of that.
Mm. And it did play into his social role because he didn't fit with the family, but he wasn't... He wasn't as lower class as the migrant workers either. So he's just this kind of third wheel of a person just trying to do things.
Yeah.
He's kind of a bit pointless in the first half of the film. It's kind of, if he wasn't there, not much dynamic would change, really.
So his story is really... it feels like it's tacked on in some ways. Hmm. Presumably in the book, his story is a lot more... than it is in the movie, and in order to get it down to 3 hours, the movie, presumably they trimmed down his part of the story because the Benedict part of the movie is very full and his part is quite skimpy. So, or maybe it was trimmed down by James Dean's death, because it does feel like he vanished towards the end. But it feels somewhat half-formed.
Yeah, I like the James Dean character the most because you kind of feel sorry for him because he's obviously he's kind of immature in the sense that he doesn't know how to grow up and move on with his life. He kind of, even though he gets a ranch and becomes a millionaire and becomes the stronger businessman, he never really finds, he doesn't never marries anyone, he never really moves away from loving, like, liking the family and being
jealous. He seems to get everything that he wants because he has that confrontation in the middle when he strikes oil with Bick.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, and then you think, like, well, you know... But then by the end, he's a lonely old man who you find out really got nothing that he wanted from life.
Yeah.
He wanted Leslie. That's all he really wanted, I think.
Yeah. And really,
which is kind of odd, because that's not really brought up that much until the end.
He calls her, he compliments her on her beauty, and I think he likes that she's nice to him, and that no one else in the early part of the family life is nice to him apart from the sister who died. So, you know, I guess it's, he feels alone, and she was kind, and therefore he latches onto
it. It could have been, not it could have been anyone, but it just happened to be her who was nice to him.
Yeah.
If it had been someone else, it would have played out in probably a similar fashion.
Well, I think he genuinely really likes her, but he's just, he's imbalanced in some way.
Yeah.
He definitely stands out from everyone else. His acting style. He's in the melodrama, but you probably couldn't tell that just by watching his performance.
Very, very mumbly man. We had to have the subtitles on for part of it to understand what he's saying some of the time. But that's the kind of southern drawl that kind of authenticates the performance, I think. And I loved seeing him just sit in an environment. I could watch him fidget and put his hat on things and like lay back and get comfortable and then move a bit all the time. There's just something very watchable about him, his performance. And for me, the best moment in it is right towards the end when he's got the old man makeup on and they have a kind of a big party at the end to kind of make James Dean feel good about himself and kind of be this big man. Jet is like a millionaire and he's having a party.
Yeah, because he's opening a hotel.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And an airport.
Oh, yeah. Hotel, airport, yes.
So much stuff happens in this film.
He's down on his luck. He's fallen out properly and had a sort of fight with various family members in the Bick household. And he's kind of drunk and he finally gets comfortable. Just as he's about to give his speech, he kind of drunkenly falls onto the table and falls asleep and the party just sort of disintegrates and he's left there. And then he gets up, he makes a slurring speech. The one family member that kind of was going to like him sees him, that he's a mess, and then he falls over the table and falls asleep, and that's the last we see of him. And I really like that moment. He kind of bows out over some tables and falls asleep on the ground.
That's kind of his second chance, because he couldn't get Leslie. So 20 or 30 years later, he tries to marry Leslie's daughter instead.
Yeah.
And it's sport, because she sees him dead drunk, making a speech about how much he wants Leslie, and then kaput.
He comes across as kind of immature, and like she can see that then, and isn't as infatuated by him. So, the film itself is focused on the family dynamic. So we haven't talked about some of the anecdotes and moments in the film between the family members. I mean, there was a lot of little ones. A lot of them address race, gender, and roles within the family. Any of them stand out for you, Ab?
Well, it's just really weird that for most of the film, it seems like Bick and Leslie don't like each other.
Yeah.
Then that they've gotten married purely based on lust, I guess. And then once they actually have to live together, they really don't get on.
Until the latter parts of the movie.
I wouldn't go as far as to say they like hate each other. Certainly they've got some differences. Like at the beginning, you see Bick out of his comfort zone in like the East Coast, and then he's plopped into the world of Elizabeth Taylor's character Leslie, where she comes across as like the big strong character. You know, she knows what's going on. She's obviously as a woman, she's, you know, what am I trying to say?
She's a strong, independent woman.
Yes.
She's educated, she knows what she wants, and
she's very much the sort of character you'd expect from a female in a blaxploitation movie.
Well, there's that. And then after the first 20 minutes, the whole thing is reversed. Now she is taken out of her comfort zone and plops straight into like this huge Texas ranch.
Yeah.
And she tries, but it's just, she's not the correct fit.
She's the liberal in a conservative state, essentially.
Mm.
I think she ended up fitting in quite well. I wouldn't say quite quickly, but fairly quickly. I think the strongest part of this film is her character. Mm. That's the reason that, especially at the beginning, why you want to keep watching.
Yeah.
Because she is so well written, such a strong, like, female character, especially at the time and this certain type of film, like the melodrama romance.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't see characters like her that often.
She's very determined, and she kind of makes up her own mind after seeming a bit weak to the locals. Like she sort of faints at a barbecue, and there's moments of weakness where everyone thinks she's not going to fit in. She's, you know, from the east or whatever, or from the north.
She's too weak for the heat.
Yeah, exactly. But then she kind of decides, right, I'm going to own this, and I'm going to be a Texas woman, and I am going to step up to the plate. And it, you know, it's her battle to do that. And also, Bick is trying to mould his children once they have them into being kind of what he wants them to be, which is essentially he wants to have a boy, he wants them to run the ranch, and he wants them to be as much like him as he could possibly craft them.
Because that's the family tradition. He hasn't just plucked this out of the air. Yeah. It's what his grandfather did for his...
They're all cowmen, as he puts it.
And it's possible that his part of his journey through the whole movie is him kind of escaping from the mould that he was put into to be somebody different as well.
Yeah, he has to try and... He kind of is forced to change his own views and his own beliefs and deal with the fact that family life is not as easy as you think it's going to be.
Maybe he was so awkward because those were his father's beliefs and they just kind of... They're not entirely his own.
Hmm. So they kind of introduce the babies and so they kind of just skip into it and go,
They've been together a while, now they've had some babies.
And
they have twins, I'm just saying.
Yeah. One little girl, they kind of do like a visual psych where he's holding a little baby in pink and it's like a girl. And you're like, ah, they didn't get the boy they thought they did. Wait a minute, they did. There's a boy as well. Aww. And we see them grow up a bit and we see that Bick is kind of putting emphasis on his son. Particularly, he's particularly proud to have a boy, and he starts kind of training him to be a rancher by buying him a pony. And we see like a little birthday party where even though they're twins, they focus on the boy more and give him a pony and force him to ride it.
He's crying buckets whilst he's put on this horse. It's horrible.
There's a lot of very awkward moments when it comes to like the children in this film.
There's a 10 to 15 minute session of crying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah. One of my favourite crying moments, as weird as that sounds, is they have Thanksgiving later on when the kids
are
about the same. They're about the same, but it's just in a kind of pause in the relationship. Like she goes back to live with her parents for a bit, and she's taking the kids, and it's Thanksgiving, and the dad didn't come, and the kids have made friends with a turkey
while it was alive
called Pedro. Well, obviously while it was alive, that was implied. They made friends with a frozen turkey. No.
I've done that many times.
You have lots of frozen turkey friends.
You never met Alvadar, did you?
Oh, he was tasty though. But they feed the turkey, they bond with little Pedro, and then of course it's Thanksgiving, time to eat the turkey, and they're all wearing little like Indian head garbs because it's Thanksgiving. And all start crying, all three of the little kids.
Once they clock that it's Pedro,
they're
just in tears. They have to leave the room. Yeah. She's trying to calm them down on the stairs.
And then on top of that, they get a letter saying that their dad like misses them, but he obviously didn't turn up. So.
And then they cry some more.
Yeah.
And the black servant goes away because he's all confused because the kids are crying and he's never seen crying kids before, apparently. And he's off.
He's used to those emotionally constipated Texans.
No, this is in Maryland.
He's used to the emotionally constipated Marylanders.
No, I'm sure their kids cried.
Hmm. So yeah, so there's three kids now, suddenly. The listeners might be confused. They probably should have watched it, though, the idiots. You're not idiots, listeners, sorry. So there's some good moments and jeopardy by torturing your children, right? That's what we were saying, was it? Well, not quite that, but... And, like, he forces his child to ride the horse with him, and then it doesn't go well. The mother sort of takes him away, relieves the situation.
And even early on in that scene, he's got a little kid's doctor kit. So he could pretend to be a doctor.
Oh, yeah. That's a good setup because he becomes a doctor later in life and the father's against that because, of course, you'd be against a doctor.
Yeah, that's the maddest thing about it. That's probably one of the things that doesn't work for me is that you're annoyed that your son wants to be a doctor.
Yeah.
What?
It's kind of like rich person problems. Oh, I want my daughter to be a woman and go to like a university and stuff. Oh, and I want my son to be a rancher, but he wants to be a doctor and go to university. Oh, if only their genders were switched, we'd be happy. Yeah, it's kind of like, well, what's your problem? You both kids are good and you're moaning about it? Like, big deal.
Yeah, but by the end, they come to realise that and accept them for who they are. And that's like the major change for like the Rock Hudson character, Bick.
Mm.
Bick. Yeah. Just sounds like pen Bick. Well, anyway.
His name's Jordan, but everybody calls him Bick because it's short for Benedict for some bizarre reason.
So essentially they're calling him Benedict.
Yes.
It is weird. Weird names. And Luz is a weird name. And Jet is kind of a weird name.
With two T's, it's definitely a weird name.
Also, Jet changes the name of his oil company from like a little, what's the
Little Riata. Riata is the big ranch.
Yeah.
And he calls it Little Riata just to annoy Bick.
Yeah.
But he has to change it because Bick tries to sue him.
And the name he decides to go with is Jet Texas? How would you say it?
Jetexas.
There's only one.
Jetexas.
Jetexas.
Oil company.
So in his name he has two T's, but in the company name, Jetexas, he actually has only one T, where two T's would have been appropriate.
Fun facts there.
We never said he was bright.
Right. Where were we? What should we be talking about, guys?
Just about the family dynamic is what we were talking about.
Oh yeah, there's more incidences through their adulthood as we see them grow older. There's always this kind of emotional chess that Leslie and Bick have to play with each other. Sometimes they're just, you know, trying to butter each other up to get each of the children, I can't explain. It's like both parents are given a children to kind of.
Yeah, as things usually stand, like, you know, the mother has the bond with the boy, and then the father has the bond with the girl, and then they both try and convince each other in a bedroom scene. That sounds a bit sexy. It's not.
They're separate beds as well.
To let their other. Each the other child have their own way, and each of them opposes to the other. So I thought that was a very interesting scene.
Yeah,
it's essentially a part manipulation, part negotiation, part confrontation scene.
Yeah,
with a tiny pinch of farce.
The whole film. There was a lot of humour in the whole film, which really surprised me, and I thought it was quite refreshing. For the type of film that it is.
Yeah, there's loads of just little funny moments where they seem like a genuinely nice family, or there's just like a funny thing is said and stuff. I quite like, there's a scene where they have Christmas together and Bick has had loads of disappointments from various members of his family and he's getting frustrated, and he kind of flippantly says he wants to give the land back to the Native Americans, and then one of his daughters comes in and says, oh yeah, way to get in the Christmas spirit, Dad, let's give the land back to the Native Americans. And it's like, I didn't mean it all.
Are you trying to avoid saying filthy Comanches?
I don't think, he did, is that what he went?
Yeah, he said filthy Comanches, yeah.
For once, I have the less potty mouth.
It's true. This film, there's a lot of racial slurs in this film, which I wasn't expecting.
But contextualised.
Because it's a period drama, it's kind of like, well, that's what the people were like. They throw in the word wetback like it's nothing, no big deal. But
I don't think I knew what that meant the first time I watched this film.
Right. Is now the time to define racist terms?
I still don't know what wetback means.
It's in reference to them working hard in the fields and stuff and getting warm.
So they didn't illegally emigrate from Mexico by swimming around the Gulf or anything.
No, they didn't do the backstroke into the country, no. I don't think that's where it's from.
Okay.
So yeah, but that's one of the things the film is trying to do, is kind of make a point about racism and kind of get it. It just makes Bick is kind of the one on the emotional journey, learning in a way not to be kind of racist, because, you know, there's lots of Mexicans living in Texas. It was kind of their land originally. They are, you know, voting Americans. They are legitimately there. They're not illegal immigrants, particularly. Mm-hmm. But the white society in Texas has always been racist in that period of time, and it's just a part of, you know, tradition and stuff to be like, think yourselves above them, I guess.
Yeah. And it's like Bick's overcoming of that, like, latent racism is a kind of like his final step.
Yeah.
To in his relationship with Leslie. Because, like, right at the beginning, one of their first little arguments is about Texas and how America claimed it, and then at the end she's like, well, now that, you know, you've kind of come over this racism, well, as you know, it may not be like the whole thing, but he's come over it a lot.
In the end, he is literally fighting racism.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things come up in his life to make him try, like, to force him to change, and one of them is that one of his sons, who does become a doctor, marries a Mexican woman and has a little boy who is also half white, half Mexican. And also the Leslie is always trying to help the Mexicans who work for them by improving
their conditions,
the conditions they live in, and
she
getting
supplies
doctors
them a doctor
to them.
Yeah.
So she's always got like a hand in trying to help the Mexican community that live around her and work with her. So, you know, it's constantly coming up as like kind of this grating point. And by the end, like you say, he literally fights against racism in kind of the is it the last scene or the penultimate scene?
It's penultimate. Kind
of yeah. So they're in a diner. They've dealt with Jet. The family are more or less just having an all-American meal in a rubbishy-looking diner in the middle of their land. And they're having a kind of, well, we've been through some tough times moment as a family. And they have to deal with the staff of the diner.
The owner of the diner is trying to throw out some Mexicans who have come in.
Initially, he's a bit concerned about the...
Juana.
Yeah, say it again.
Juana.
Who is the daughter-in-law of Bic. And you know, they let it slide because he's like a very rich landowner in the area. But then a Mexican family comes in and they're being thrown out, and then suddenly it's the kind of moment for Bic to show that he's truly changed. And he's up there and he's saying, no, leave these guys here. What's the big deal? They're just people too, right? And they actually have a bit of a long-winded fisticuffs.
Which he loses. Which is surprising for like the climax of a film.
Yeah, he's an old man though. Or an older man.
And he'd already kind of won the other fight, which didn't happen, when he knocked down all of those wine bottles that
belonged
to Jet.
Yeah, we've talked about Jet separately, but he is very much an interweaved character as well. And there was a moment like where he dealt with Jet. Like, Jet is confronted by the doctor, the big son who is a doctor, and he's kind of annoyed about the racism in Jet's hotel, and in fact, kind of unfairly, Jet beats up, you know, his son.
Geordi.
Because someone else explained the rest
Geordi
of
is Big's son.
Yes.
Geordi has a conversation with Jet. Two of Jet's, I'll say hoods, for the sake of this sentence.
Security.
Grab Geordi, and then Jet punches him up a bit. In James Sneed's patented three-move combo that he does over and over in this film.
Yeah. And then that leads into Bic kind of being the father figure and defending his son and going out for a word/fight with Jet in the wine cellar.
Yeah, yes. But rather than punching Jet, he punches him where it'll actually hurt, straight in the wine.
Yeah.
knocks down about 10 walls full of wine bottles.
Also, on a like side note, in this scene, it opens with a cat frighteningly running from one side of the wine place to the other, just really scared. I don't know why they put it in there. It was just like, why scare a cat for this scene? Nothing happened to, you know, explain that.
I think it might have been Rock Hudson's aftershave, but we can't be sure.
It is very potent, it seems, if a cat is running in fear from him.
I think we should wrap this up.
Yeah, so basically, the conclusion is that Bic has changed, the family has grown older and done what they want, and even Bic has had to change with the times and accept that he has to, you know, work in oil now. Oh, Bic, oh, how terrible it is as well. Oh, I'm a millionaire cattle rancher. Oh, I don't want to have lots of oil and lots of money and have a nice house.
Yeah, that's... Oh, just to bring up one more theme. It's a theme of change that's going throughout the whole film. They move to Texas. It's obviously like a slightly more backward place what Leslie's used to.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jet finds the oil, and then all of a sudden, like, this huge kind of arid, deserty land is then changed with all these, like, industrial things.
Yeah.
And Jet brings new cars, he's got flashy clothes, and there's shots of airplanes and shots of hotels. Yeah. And it's just kind of like how change is going to happen.
Whether you like it or not.
And, yeah, and, like, the main thing is, like, you can have whatever plans you have, but things will change. And it's how you deal with the change. And that's kind of like what the whole film is kind of about.
Yeah, in many ways it presents the example of Jet being the example of... I mean, he was willing to, you know, he didn't emotionally change, but he physically got richer and he got a lot more wealth and power.
And he did work for it. Like, yeah. Just because he found oil doesn't mean that he suddenly got rich. He did have to... He built the first mine himself by hand on his own. With the company of a small dog.
It's very much... This movie also has the film There Will Be Blood in it, just with James Dean, and they don't pay as much attention to it. But yeah, they kind of have Jet as the example of how change, not changing, has failed, and kind of Bic becomes the example of how changing you're forced to change, and it's good for you in the end.
It's kind of the hope that right at the end his characters come through, like from where he was, the kind of very male orientated, kind of racist, sexist,
traditionalist
place. And by the end, you know, it's kind of hope that people and things can change for the good. Where at the end, he's a totally changed person.
Yeah, we're left with Leslie saying that, you know, for the first time, I really felt a strong love for you and stuff when you were standing up for their stepdaughter.
So it's kind of like, in terms of like the title Giant, it's kind of a whole big arc kind of like the American dream or like the American condition, where, you know, you think of like America now, you know, there's you know, racism still exists, but everyone's equal.
Yeah, and also there's some subtext, because he kind of gets richer and richer. I mean, Bick gets richer and richer, but it's only by kind of giving up some of his toys and paying more attention to his family near the end that he becomes happier. And that's...
Because big themes is another way you can interpret it. It's just giant themes, giant country, melodrama, so the drama's big. Everything is big about
The title may seem misleading at first because there's no actual giants in it. But everything in this film actually is on a massive giant scale.
Yeah, so we're finished off with some really spelling out of the themes, because they have the Mexican child in the same cradle, or not cradle, like same little, what do they call a child's prison? What's that called?
I call it a baby cage.
A baby cage. In the baby cage, there's a Mexican child, there's the white child, they're next to you. Behind them is a black cow and a white sheep, and I think Leslie kind of verbally says some of the messages of the film in like her talk with Bick. So it really doesn't let the audience get away with not understanding it, which I think is a kind of drawback. You don't really need it spelt out, especially watching it now when we've all become big soft liberals who aren't racist and sexist.
But at the time,
perhaps
it might have needed a little bit more.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that's the film. Does anyone want to say anything in conclusion, what they thought overall, you know?
I thought it was an exceptionally good film. But that last hour did drag.
Mm. Yeah, length is maybe... because it is so long, as well as large and themes.
But that's the thing. That's kind of part of it. It had to be that long and that kind of slow. But it is long and slow at the end of the day, so it's not perfect. But I it's an exceptional film. I would give it an 8 out of 10.
Sure.
I've liked this for a long time. And, yeah, my arguments are pretty much the same, that it is just the length and the pace that plays on your endurance. But because of the type of film it needs to be that way. Good performances. Rock Hudson is stilted at the start, but then his character becomes more rounded and engaging as you go along to play into how his character is changing.
Sure.
So in context, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But when you first start the film, you're a bit, Rock Hudson's made of tin. I don't like it. Yeah. But yeah, I'd go the same 8 out of 10. I've liked this for a while,
Ollie?
Yeah, it's a good movie. I kind of have the reverse to Anthony, because I think the first hour drags a lot and then it gets better. The performances are all good. The plotting is good. On a giant scale, I would rate it as an Andre the Giant.
Or, that's big.
And on a proper scoring scale, maybe a 7 out of 10.
Hmm.
Andre the Giant does not equal 7 out of 10 in terms of big.
Well, Andre compared to big friendly giant.
Or maybe a troll or something.
I see.
Hmm. You can get bigger than Andre.
Okay.
Acceptable. I like it. I think James Dean's very charismatic, and though the melodramatic drama, I like my dramas gritty and real. This felt a little bit like I said, a play, but that it is really good. It's like a well thought out thing. It's got big themes. You know, it's a quality, just a quality film, and it's nicely directed. Lots of interesting shots. Lots of good lighting in the scenes. I'm going to give it a Big Show out of Giants on the Giant scale, because I don't think it's all that huge and awesome, because I wouldn't watch it more. It is just a little bit too long to just you. I'd sooner put on Ghostbusters than I would this. Just as an example, like Ghostbusters, you can watch again and again, for example. But Giant, you're going to maybe dust it off once a decade if you bother.
You have to equate Big Show to a number, please.
No, it's pretty good. I'll give it 7.5 out of 10.
But that makes Big Show bigger than Andre. That's not right.
It's a different scale. It's a giant scale based on charisma rather than size. Right, enough giant talk.
Did you have giant scalings before we finish?
Yeah, what is the giant scale? Who is the smallest giant? Where do you stop being a giant and just you're tall?
No, what are your giant rankings?
What do you mean?
Yeah, how would you
We need to think of giants.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So we have to think of someone who, because he made Andre 7, somehow he made Big Show bigger than Andre.
I will concede with Ollie, that this is an Andre the Giant sized awesome. How's it work? The bigger the giant, the better the film?
Well, the influence of the giant. Andre the Giant was pretty influential in that he's probably the only giant on movies for quite a long time, but he wasn't that big.
And this is where the review falls apart.
Okay, so...
We all liked it, guys.
Abigail says...
It's good.
Iron Giant, Anthony says BFG.
And there you have it.
I say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Next time. Bye-bye.
I like James Dean's wave. He did a sort of little cutting wave that wasn't really a wave, just a sort of, you're out. Yeah. Anyway, bye.